Tsunami Gaff. Wasting every Saturday night together. Only Tsunami.
Hey, it's episode 61 of the Tsunami Gaff podcast. I'm Greg Zeno. As always, we have B-Dubs and C-Kohler.
Hello.
Hey.
And this week we also have Crocodile.
Hello.
How's it going, everyone?
We had Loop on and it was awesome.
Okay.
It's a fun show, I'm sorry.
I don't think I have anything to apologize for here. I don't think most people would disagree with you.
Yeah, apparently the ratings do.
Well, I mean, I think they knew what they were getting when they premiered it at 2 in the morning. So, I mean, they had the classic series on a while back, and I don't recall it being a ratings hit either. Like, that was, I think, before Nami came back. But
yeah, no, I mean, this was totally just a series DeMarco got because he wanted it and he likes it. And I'm okay with that as long as it keeps being good.
Yep. Also worth noting that it pulled like 500,000 at like 2 a.m. and Twin Peaks didn't even get that at 9 p.m.
Oh, that's embarrassing. Well, I mean, Twin Peaks is on like, you know, Showtime, and who the hell has Showtime?
I mean, the same amount of people who have Cartoon Network.
You need data to be able to really have a fruitful conversation on this topic, I feel.
Because, I mean, it's like Showtime you have to pay extra to get. Cartoon Network is like, yeah, and I'll throw that in with, you know, the other package.
Yeah, but still, like, Twin Peaks, come on.
Yeah, I know, but Showtime, like, if it was HBO, I'd be like, that's horrible. But, I mean, it's Showtime, you know?
I'm surprised. That seems pretty crazy that it got, that this show from, like, several years ago, an anime at 2 a.m., got better ratings than a primetime Showtime debut. Yeah, it's a big deal.
All right, I guess.
Either way, I don't think there was any other news
at all. No, I mean, there was a little bit of Lupin news. We found out that we're not getting the proper opening and endings because of licensing issues.
Oh, yeah.
That's such a bummer, too, because that's one of the best openings I've seen in a while.
It really is, and it sucks because they've played that opening in the U.S. before. It's the song they always use for Lupin. You know, it's like the only one they have.
It's technically a remix, so it could be because of the person who remixed it.
I guess.
Yeah.
It's so different, I couldn't tell the difference between that and the original.
Yeah, it's not much different, but I guess it's enough to, you know, be an issue. Yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of disappointing because it also means we won't be getting it during the show itself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who cut that opening that did air. I mean, they didn't do a bad job. The music from the show, and so it's not super interesting. The shots that they used, it's okay. I mean, like, actually better than
the Italian cut.
I don't think that's true, is it?
No, I don't think it's sure. Either. I think it's like a version of the Italian cut.
I don't know. The opening, I guess the classic Lupin the Third theme opening, I think was associated with the Japanese airing, I want to say.
I was going to say, I think I've watched the Italian cut, and this is not it. I think this is something that was created by Adult Swim.
And I feel like this is something we could look up, or if someone wants to do that.
Yeah, we can look it up, or someone who watches can comment in the thread about it. But regardless, it's okay.
Yeah, it's not horrible. It's just not, you know, absolutely
it looked
amazing.
Made up, like, to me, because it was showing shots that really weren't going exactly with the music, and then it ends on a real sort of like, it doesn't end in a cool way. It just sort of ends with a still shot, and then that's it, and it's kind of I don't know. But I guess it could have been worse. But
yeah, I mean, I'm more just disappointed we're not getting the theme itself in the show, because where they played the new opening theme in the show, that would have been like a classic place to have, you know. But this is probably better kept for later.
I guess they would have cut it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have at least played it in full once.
Yeah. It's so beautiful. It's like one of the coolest looking OPs.
It definitely is.
If DeMarco was listening, I would have preferred they just take the music out of that opening, put different music in it, even if it didn't match, just so I could look at the visuals, because it's so cool looking.
Oh, it's definitely really cool. Like, I had to go back and watch it earlier today. I was like, oh man, I got to see that.
I feel some visuals go really well with some music, and sometimes you can separate them to some degree. I guess I'd have to see how that opening might work with a totally different soundtrack to it. It might not be as good.
It's also possible, too, that we'll get the Space Dandy situation again, where maybe they work it out and they do get to air it.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, hopefully that is the case. And then they'll air it once. And never again.
Good enough.
So I guess the Fooly Cooly news from Anime Expo, that was new this week, right? Between this week and last week? Or?
Oh, right. Yeah, I know. What happened there?
I think from my recollection, I don't have it opened up in front of me. From my recollection, they were saying they were, I don't know if they were going to premiere a trailer, but they're at least going to have a panel about it and talk about it. So I think we should get some new information about that. And of course, Anime Expo is the weekend of July 4th, so not too far off.
Here we go. Trailer planned for Anime Expo, blah, blah, blah. Showing trailer, poster giveaway, production announcements. Yeah, it looks like it's just a rollout thing. I don't think we'll be seeing this is when it's going to air, but, you know.
I'm so looking forward to seeing what the character designs look like.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know, obviously there's a new protagonist, but obviously there's all the returning characters. And with the different, I know it's obviously got some of the main people who wrote the original, but then it's got different animators and different producers on the other end. It'll be interesting to see how much they switch up the style or if they try to mimic the original.
Also, Anime Expo, they've got to announce their new show there.
What's the next show that's ending that's coming up?
Attack on Titan.
Oh, right. Okay. So are we expecting Stardust Crusaders or something else?
Yeah, we're expecting Stardust Crusaders.
Yeah, probably.
That'll be great. Another really fun show on the block.
That'll be around for a year. Remember, it's 50 episodes. Woo!
I think it's 48, but it's going to be a while. Plus, you add up, marathons and stuff, so.
Yeah, more than a year. Either way, it'll be nice to have Stardust Crusaders premiere on my birthday. Anyway, want to talk about Dragon Ball Super? Episode 22, Change, an Unexpected Return. His name is Ginyu. He didn't need to be here.
He didn't, but it's better that he is.
Is it?
Well, to be honest, I thought the addition of Ginyu, having watched this back when it was aired in Japan, I thought the addition of Ginyu would have been kind of a cool, kind of funny, neat addition, because it was not like this in the movie. There was no Ginyu. So I said, they're bringing him back, going to do something cool for him. That's nice. As you can tell from the preview, though, he gets
wrecked.
Episode, so he basically accomplishes nothing. There was no reason to bring him back. I think he's pretty much squandered here. I was expecting something cool to come of it, but knowing what happens in the future, and of course, since the preview spoiled it to you guys, he basically does jack all.
Well, I mean, he's more interesting than the guy we had, you know?
I would say, he doesn't do anything like cool, but I do like that they're instead going down the comedy route with him. That's something I've kind of noticed about Super and more recent Kai as well, is that Dragon Ball's better when it's trying to be funny. And so I kind of like Ginyu here. I did not know he wasn't in the movie until you guys mentioned it just now. So
this episode starts off with Tagama trying to be cool, but then he gets hit in the balls and he's like,
he just kicked in the sack.
It was headbutt, actually.
Like Gotenks shows up, headbutts him in the sack, and then, that's the end of it. Like, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen Kai yet, but Goten and Trunks fuse, and they turn into a little shit.
Who has, Sega Genesis music.
He does. And he has the best abilities.
Yeah, Gotenks has been pretty heavily underused since, he's been pretty much a non-factor since Dragon Ball Z ended. And, I guess he does some cool things in Kai, as some people see, but in Super, he's been a non-entity.
Is the guy doing Ginyu's voice the same?
I think so. I mean, it sounds similar, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's the same guy from Kai. I don't think it's the same guy from the original one, though.
I mean, there have been so many dubs of Dragon Ball at this point. But yeah, his voice didn't sound any different than the last time I heard his voice, which was in Kai, so...
Frieza continuing to give out all these great lines. I mean, he's like, it's not just the acting, which is great. They took time.
The translation is great, yeah.
Yeah, they took time to write really interesting and funny, clever dialogue for Frieza.
Yeah, basically they went, you know, all in on, you know, the whole Space Napoleon thing with him. It's funny because Frieza's good in, you know, like, subbed, but he's just so much better in the dub. And a large part of it is, you know, sort of the lines they give him, you know. There's, like, he's so such a condescending asshole. It's amazing.
Yeah, and then he just goes off on little, like, he just comes up with very colorful things to say. It's really fun. He, I guess, notices, was it Gohan or Goten? I can't remember. And then he just gets Goten triggered.
Yeah, he notices Goten, and then he notices Trunks. He's like, oh, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Like, things were going okay until they showed up.
And then Gohan's dad had to come in and sacrifice himself.
Again. I feel bad for him at this point. How many times has he had to sacrifice himself for Gohan now?
Oh, Piccolo.
I feel it's just unnecessary. He could have just, like, he didn't need to stand there in front of the laser. He could have moved Gohan. Like, that was an option.
Like, he could have tackled him to the side.
Or he could have used his stretchy arms to pull Gohan away from the beam, too.
Well, yeah, but I mean, apparently Piccolo's got a hard-on for throwing himself in front of, you know, explosions to save Gohan. You know, like, he's got to prove that he's the better dad.
Yeah, I think I get the impression that the guy who writes Dragon Ball just... He got a really strong response when Piccolo sacrificed himself once, so he just keeps reusing that trope over and over.
But, like, this is a change from the movie, because in the movie, Piccolo didn't do this.
Oh, yeah. Okay, my bad. This is a TV director, writer, invention.
Yeah, okay. I mean, this is also... It probably has more to do with dragging it out than anything else.
Oh, but you know what, though? Now it makes perfect sense, because this is exactly the kind of thing you see in filler. When you have, like, a filler writer who has to do something with a character, they'll just go back and make the character do the same thing that they've done in the past, because then they know that they're not breaking character.
It creates a good moment of sort of shock for the viewer, you know, like this specific one, and it drags it out, you know, what Gohan's going to do to the next episode, so, you know.
Although I will argue that it does not shock me. That's the problem with it. It's exactly what I would expect Piccolo to do, so I'm not remotely worried about him or anything.
Yeah, he'll come back. They've got Dragon Balls.
Yeah. We'll talk more about that in the next show.
They've got Dragon Balls.
Well, talking about sacrifice, so yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, want to talk about Kai?
All right.
Dragon Ball Z Kai, the final chapter is episode 121, I Am the Strongest, the clash of Goku versus Vegeta, in which Vegeta just kind of stands around and acts like a heel wrestler.
Yeah. I'll admit that this was kind of dramatic and there was kind of a good sense of tension, but the episode did not use time well.
No, it didn't. But at the same time, we got to see Vegeta doing his best heel turn, so, you know. I'm like, this is when Dragon Ball Z was like, yeah, you know what, fuck it, we're just going to do wrestling.
I think it accomplished a couple of things. It accomplishes showing that, like, how much control does Babidi have over Vegeta, and also to show that Vegeta really is next level bad, more of a bad man than ever, because he's willing to, like, kill thousands and thousands of people.
Just to fight Goku.
Yeah, just to fight Goku. So,
and then it turns out both of them are stronger than Gohan was when he fought Cell.
I think... Even at this point in Kai, I don't think we would see Vegeta just kill innocent people like that anymore. So this gave them, I guess, story-wise, an excuse to have him do it. It's like, oh, now he's possessed or he's bad more so than ever, so he can get away with doing this. And what I was going to talk about the Dragon Ball, somebody in the thread mentioned this, like, Vegeta kills thousands of people in that arena, and then there's like a nuke that goes off in the distance when it when he finishes his attack, and then like Bulma and Chi-Chi are just there, and they're just like, "Oh, Vegeta, what are you doing?" But they're not really worried about the thousands of people that have just died. It's just the fact that Vegeta's acting like a jerk.
They got Dragon Balls. What do they care?
That's right. And then someone in the thread was like, "It doesn't matter. They just wish them all back. They got Dragon Balls."
Yeah, seriously. You use one wish to wish them back. You wish another wish to make them all forget it happened. And boom, they don't know any better.
Yeah, that underlying fact can kind of reduce tension and kind of obscure incentives. And the whole also thing, like the fact that Goku's on Earth right now, even though he's supposed to be dead, there's these little weird things that just kind of make a lot of decision-making processes in this show a little weird.
Yeah, we had a long conversation when it happened about Goku coming back to life just on a whim and being like, what are the rules? Like, there doesn't appear to be any rules. All he has to do is just talk to someone in afterlife and they'll just let him come back to life.
I mean, like, you're supposed to have been like a really, really, really good dude and you get like 24 hours or whatever. Because, like, it's something they did for his grandpa at some point in original Dragon Ball.
Ah, that's true. Yeah.
But, like, at the same time, I feel like maybe they should have not brought him back right away.
No, that the fans would have thrown a hissy fit.
Yeah, good point.
Like, the reason he's back is that the fans literally threw such a huge hissy fit if he was like, okay, no, I'm actually not going to change main characters.
Good point.
And now we are literally in the Gohan sucks power hour.
Yeah, at least for a little while. Like, he'll get better in Kai, and then he'll get worse again.
But, you know, in this episode, also, nobody, unlike the Z Fighters group, gave a shit about anyone who died. Oh, man, Vegeta just blew up, like, 1,700 people, and Bulma's like, what's gotten into him? Yeah. And 18 is just like, money, give it to me.
Hey, she won the Money in the Bank fight, so she gets paid.
I swear, though, one of these days, one of Satan's adoring fans is going to get him killed.
Yeah, like, they keep trying to push him off on every problem they have. It's like, Mr. Satan, they're firing a nuke at the city. Can you do something? I don't know, guys. It's a missile, you know?
I will say that the art in this episode looked really good. Like, the character designs were totally on point, especially a lot of the close-ups of Vegeta and his face and stuff. For an old show especially, it looked really good. Like, I love the style and, like, the very sharp edges on the characters. It was just, or the sharp angles. It just, man, it just looked like awesome classic anime. Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily, like, remark on the age of the show because there's certainly many classic either TV shows or, of course, OVAs or movies or whatnot that are especially well animated. It's more an issue of time and resources and budget and whatnot than age. Of course, you can point to, like, you know, classic Disney films and so on and so forth. I will point out, though, that this kind of upcoming stretch, to my recollection, is one of the better animated parts of DBZ in general. Like, especially the Goku versus Vegeta fight is one of the better choreographed and animated fights in just Dragon Ball in general. That's probably why you're picking up on things looking especially high quality. It's because this is actually, at least from my recollection, one of the times the show looks its best.
Yeah, and I should be more careful. I'm not saying that all old shows look bad. I just feel like when I look at the average production values of a modern anime, they just, like, even some beloved shows I remember back from, you know, the early 90s, like Ranma and stuff, like, they didn't really look as good as I think current shows do just because of the way it was made, where cell animation and stuff. But I'm just more commenting on just, like, the actual character designs, because we've seen Kai episodes where the characters look really off model and awful. And these look just, like, on point. These look like, this is the Vegeta face. This is the Goku face that's, like, iconic.
Yeah.
Also, I was totally rooting for Goku to just blast Supreme Kai. Just fucking put him out of his misery.
Please.
So this little idiot just literally goes, starts off the entire plot with his terrible plan. And then now he's like, no, please, listen to me. I've clearly been leading you guys the right direction this whole time.
Yeah.
He's worn out his welcome as far as, like, he was basically this whole time just there to explain things. And at this point, like, I don't even want him around to do it anymore. He's just a waste.
He needs to die.
I have no idea, but I'm guessing he just never accomplishes anything.
No. If I remember right, he does one thing.
Oh, wow.
Like he has.
Okay, two things.
I don't even want to go back into the whole concept of Kai's dying, but we do know that that happens.
Like, it's completely just useless for him. Like, he lives in other world. What the hell is he need to live for?
I'm
a demigod, but
I can apparently... I'm mortal or something.
Yeah. And that completely, like, makes the whole thing with Beerus weird, because apparently their lives are supposed to be tied to each other. So, like, when he dies, does Beerus die? Like, in his sleep or something?
Somebody said that's what happens.
That's my understanding as well.
Because it's just one of those things. It's like, huh, that's weird, you know?
I don't know if you'd think Kai ever dying in Dragon Ball, does he?
No. Supreme Kai eats it for like 20 minutes.
When is this again? Can you remind me? Was it from Super Blue or something?
It's the Super Blue thing. And it's right after Gohan finishes up with what he's doing. And it's the earrings thing.
Well, I mean, clearly it doesn't exist at this point, so it's always going to be awkward to try to retcon characters, establishing canon and narrative and whatnot.
I just think it would be really funny if, you know, at some point we get like a little flashback of Whis just watching Beerus and, like, you know, a halo just appears on his head while he's sleeping for like 20 minutes, and then, you know, it goes away and he's like, maybe I shouldn't tell him about this.
You know, it lasted just long enough for him to finish yawning from his nap. He was like, yeah, I'm dying. Oh, I'm okay.
And like we've said before, the only consequence to dying at all in Dragon Ball is that you get a halo.
Well, and you can't travel around, you know, the living world, but, you know.
Well, that's not true. Look at Goku.
Well, I mean, you get 24 hours.
By the way,
I'm sure that will be rigidly stuck to.
And he will eventually come back to life. So, again... Death is meaningless in Dragon Ball. He's just got a halo.
Pretty much.
I mean, look at King Kai. He's dead, and he has a halo, and he's a King Kai.
Well, I mean, what does it matter for him, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, that's kind of funny, considering a future episode of Super.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was kind of a...
Also, just an aside, what's happening in Super makes me really wish we were watching that Super.
Oh, definitely. That would be so good.
Like, it actually turns out the stuff they wrote for the new show is actually good.
Yeah.
That's only, what, 70 episodes away or something?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, about a year.
But it's not like the stuff before then isn't great.
Yeah, there's some good stuff along the way. I'm not saying there isn't, but just like, just last week's episode is definitely one of the top five or top three Super episodes so far. So it's going to be a while to get that. Anyway, Attack on Titan.
Attack on Titan, episode 33, The Hunters. So, the Colossal Titan gets away with some bullshit.
What else is new?
Yeah, what else is new? And so Rainer noms Eren and they run off, and then there's a long flashback of stuff we're pretty sure we've seen, but, I mean, what is one, the trio as kids fight some people flashback versus another one, right?
Yeah, felt fillery.
More than a little.
They were like, ah, we have to make up a half an episode somewhere.
How about here?
We did also, though, get the best scene in the episode, which was the dramatic ration eating.
Aggressive eating. Yeah, that was definitely the highlight of the episode.
Oh, yeah. We'll take these rations and eat them.
I swear to God, it's like they saw that scene in Death Note where he, like, eats the potato chips, and they're like, yes, we must do that. Only we will use a worse food.
Rations.
The only thing that bothered me, I mean, I think it was an okay episode. Actually, kind of forgettable, to be honest, with the flashback, but... the thing that bothered me, though, is that I like Mikasa a lot as a character, but I got to admit, man, she's just way too obsessed with Eren. Like, it's okay for her to be, like, wanting to be protective and stuff because of their backstory, but it's like all her character is in this episode.
Yeah, so I think you like what Mikasa does. You don't like her character, though.
there's not a whole lot much else to her other than that, though.
Well, as long as she's not talking and is killing Titans, she's amazing.
See, she opens her mouth, that's when trouble starts.
As soon as she opens her mouth, it's like, I love Aaron. And it's like, God.
What is that thing? It's called like the Bucknell test or something?
The Bechdel test.
The Bechdel test. Yeah, she fails it miserably. Because, like, she cannot open her mouth without talking about Aaron.
Well, the test is for a show, so she wouldn't fail it.
Oh, I thought it was for characters. Okay.
But, I mean, this season at least already passed that test with Krista and Ymir.
It did. Oh,
yeah, they're talking about each other. But, yeah, the Bechdel test, however it's pronounced, is are there ever two women or a group of women talking to each other about something that isn't a man? Yeah,
or like a relationship or something.
Right.
Yeah.
It's only one, two or more women, two, have a conversation, three, about something other than a man.
Yeah, I mean, this show passes it. I mean, we've got, like, Hanj, you know, and she's all about, like, being a leader and crazy.
No, that's Sasha's potato girl.
Oh, yes, Sasha's
got stuff going on, but then Hanj's got, like, her Titan fascination and
fascination, quote-unquote.
Yeah, yeah, fetish, fascination, whatever.
It's a fetish. She has a fetish.
But yeah, but the problem is Mikasa is such a cool character concept, but wasted on the fact that she doesn't seem to ever think of anything other than Aaron.
Yeah.
So that's just, I just wanted to get that out there because it bothers me. I wish they would do something more with her character where she has her own motivations.
Yeah, well, you know, she's in love with Aaron, so.
Yeah. So one note.
What are Armin's motivations again?
He's in love with Aaron.
Kinda. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That actually, as far as we know, that's it.
But he also
he just really wants to see outside the walls. That's what his motivation is.
He wants to go to the beach with Aaron. That's what he wants to do. Like specifically with Aaron.
He kind of is like a male version of Mikasa in that instead of being like a badass who takes down Titans, he like is like this master strategist and like thinker. But again, it's always in the service of protecting Aaron, basically.
And I feel he's not so emotionally dependent or attached to Aaron. Like to him, Aaron is a good friend, whereas to Mikasa, Aaron is like her star, her moon and shining stars and
yeah,
whatever
like,
you want to use.
Like, he's not going to try and suck Aaron off. She is.
But, like, also, I don't know. I had a thought there, but then you said suck Aaron off, and I can't think of what I was going to say. It was basically has he ever done anything where he was willing to be separated from Aaron?
There was that time he let Aaron get eaten.
But that was, like, I guess, in the service of Aaron, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I mean, Aaron told him not to get eaten, and so, you know, he let Aaron get eaten.
I feel there was another time they got separated, but I'm having a hard time remembering it.
But it was never deliberate. See, that's my point. He's like, hey, Aaron and Mikasa, I need to go over here and do this other thing and help these other people. Like, he would never do that. He's too attached to the Aaron trio.
Oh, he was separated from Aaron for a good long time in the female Titan arc. But, he was in a different flank with Reiner and when Annie came to attack and whatnot.
Did he choose to do that?
No.
Well, I don't think he really had a choice to be where he was assigned. I mean,
see, that's what I'm saying. Like, for him to have a richer, deeper character, he has to be willing to not care only about Aaron. Like, he has to be able to go and do other things or have other things he cares about. Somebody, you know, I forget who just, Grex maybe said, wanting to go to the beach or whatever. That is, like, at least something, you know, he has a that he cares about that motivates him other than just wanting to protect his friends, Aaron and Mikasa. So.
Well, I mean, he wants to go to the beach with Aaron.
I think you're just making that up.
No, I swear to God, I'm not.
I think what's happening is that there's a mental image of Aaron and Armin walking around in the beach in speedos or something, and that's not what's going to actually happen.
No, it's like two friends going somewhere on a trip.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's not like, you know, like Rocky IV where
they're going to go running and
Rocky are like, you know, splashing the waves, you know, celebrating the workout or whatnot. That's not what's happening here.
They're not going to hug as the water crashes over them.
I think you're just trying to paint a humorous picture there, B-dubs. that's not his real feelings. Although I guess I really don't know what his true feelings are because he doesn't really talk about them. But anyway, other than that, yeah, the Titans ran off and I can't even remember anything else happening in the episode except for that one guy who was like a guard had like a conversation.
Oh, yeah. Hans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Hanji is like giving orders while just lying on the ground.
Yeah. Like they can't just like give her a chair or something?
Nope.
Oh yeah, and Pixis is back and he's still really creepy about Titans.
Did you expect anything different?
Remember the guy who really who just kind of has a Titan fetish?
Oh, so there's another one. Okay.
Well,
they're perfect for each other.
I mean, so Hanji has more of a fetish for science about Titans.
Yes.
He actually wants to fuck Titans. No, it's more like he literally has a war fetish for Titans.
Oh, God.
Anyway, let's move on.
Yes.
Tokyo Ghoul. Oh, no, this is even worse. Tokyo Ghoul, episode 11, High Spirits. In this episode, there is not high spirits.
No. Someone gets tortured, and then they wash his feet, and then they torture him again, and then they wash his feet.
I want to thank whoever in the thread every week posts that picture that just says, I am the edge.
It's a good summary of the show.
It is.
What I don't understand is that, So obviously I've kind of lost track of what's going on and why. Part because I've somewhat lost interest, but also part because I think the show is doing a poor job explaining what's happening. But I'm just kind of struck where this the main protagonist is getting tortured for God knows what reason. And then someone will come in and say, don't worry, we'll get you out of here, we got you back, stay up, you know, splash the water on him, leave, and he gets tortured some more. And then the pattern gets repeated over and over again. People coming in and saying, oh, we feel so bad for you. Don't worry. Someone will come rescue you. Just stay strong, man. And then the MC has like his fingers falling off or some shit. It's just like, what is happening?
I'm totally 100% with you. I do not understand why there are secret people helping him, but then they don't help him.
We're looking for opportunity. The opportunity isn't happening.
We have time to wash your feet, but not to get you out of here.
Yeah, we apparently are in a ginormous arena area void of any bad guys, but hey, you know, we can't risk taking you right now. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. It's weird. And then we've got basically a guy who is Jason torturing
him. Yeah, he actually called himself Jason. Wow.
He calls himself Jason and he wears a mask. And then at the same time, the show can't decide whether it's going to be Friday the 13th or Saw.
Also, his hair went white, but Ghost in the Shell did it better.
Yeah, also, I remember seeing promo art for the show where his hair is white and he looks like crazy. And I always wondered what turns the MC to that. So he just gets tortured and he goes like Super Saiyan or some shit? Like, I don't really understand what's happening.
He's seen shit that'll turn you white.
I assume it's something about the torturing is making it happen. And I don't know, but it kind of feels deliberate. But I do have one question that I don't mind being spoiled on. Is the character we're seeing in the opening every week, is that our main character with the white hair?
I assume so.
I don't even know.
The opening ends every week with a white-haired character looking at the screen, and I don't know who that is.
I haven't seen the show, but it looks enough like him that I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume it's him, especially... Idea. Yeah, especially since, you know, his hair's turning white.
Yeah. No, it's a secret lost long twin brother who met a girl called Blize and got her organs implanted in him, and he's meeting up with the main character, and they're going to do a lost brother face-off at the end, and that's how it ends.
But it's not edgy enough. They need to, like, be cutting their wrists and stuff and with razors and...
They need each other's organs to live. They're both secretly dying. So they need others' organs to live. So now they're trying to out-assimilate each other or something. You see, it's a black hair versus white hair. It's a dichotomy of the inner struggle, of the pain, of the ghoul. Are you human or are you not? It's who knows.
This show is just... You know what it is? It's like Try Hard. This show is just a Try Hard.
Also, there's still this weird white-haired crazy kid.
Oh, God.
Oh, you know, yeah.
In case you forgot this was anime, well, you never would forget, but here's anime character.
Yeah, he just jumps in and kills like 15 super ghouls in like 5 seconds because, hey, he's anime character trope.
Look, check out this 10-year-old. He's going to hop on a motorcycle into a building and then kill like 10 people by spinning around with a gun.
Who is that person? Can someone explain to me that? Who is that person?
It's not been revealed yet, I assume. Here's the problem with him, one of many, is that am I supposed to literally be going, oh my god, this kid's a badass, this is awesome, because I don't fucking care. Like, you got
maybe if you're 15 years younger.
Maybe, no. But like, it's just, there's nothing motivating me to like him. He's just a psychopath.
Yeah. Like, I just can't be bothered to give a shit.
Another problem I have, too, is that, like, I remember when we were first starting to watch this show, I was, like, wanting to give it a chance. And I was like, yeah, you know, the whole ghoul thing, it's kind of interesting. I wonder how they'll take this and stuff. And it feels like they've kind of just let all that go to the wayside a bit. And it's like, now it's just goofy characters fighting. And, you know, they don't even explain things. Like, what are they called, the doves or whatever? They've got their, like, crazy weapons made of ghoul gunk. And, like, I have no idea what the hell is going on there. They never explain it.
So you know when, like, Toka, like, pulls out her, like, wing stuff?
Yeah.
It's like they literally just cut those off and just put them in briefcases and use them.
That's not how organs work, though.
Who knows?
I mean, I get you, Grex. I totally agree. I think that's exactly what's happened. But I don't know why that's a thing. Like, I don't know why you can do that.
Because it's edgy and cool to 15-year-old boys and maybe girls. I don't know if it's popular with women in this show, but
it probably is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because it's like, look at all the blood. Did you see that scene in this episode where he's getting tortured and it's all that blood on the ground? That's awesome.
I think it's a lot of these shows literally run on the, I'm not supposed to be watching this.
People who read the manga say this is kind of butchered and for every sense of the word, so that might be harming our enjoyment of it. Though, granted, I think the early part of the anime was more consistent than manga, and I didn't really enjoy that either, so I don't necessarily think there'd be a huge jump in quality if it was more faithful or a strong adaptation. But even then, people are saying that anime is like a mockery of it, and that the second season is like significantly worse. I would also add that there was someone who's I think, come into the thread more than once asking what episode we were on, and I think they were... episode you're hinting at was next week's episode, so I assume something's going to happen next week, but I don't know what's going to happen. But
well, next week is the finale of the first season.
Oh, it is?
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Already?
Next week is episode 12. We're halfway through next week.
Huh.
I still can't believe we're getting both seasons at once.
I'm glad. I mean, I'm happy to hear that we're already halfway done. That seems pretty fast.
And that once we're done with it, we'll be done.
Yeah.
Forever.
Forever.
And just to comment on what you said about the manga, you know, I mean, all you have to do is watch the ending of this show and realize that, like, it kind of, even just by looking at the art, you can kind of tell that the manga is probably better.
I think it was more just a narrative and characterization that was really hurt. They're not going to
I know, we're on the same page, but I'm just saying, like, even just looking at the art, I'd rather look at that art than look at this show. Because it looks so much nicer. I don't even know if the story is any different. It probably is better, but like just the art alone is better.
I don't know. Like I tried getting into it a little while back, and it feels like this season, what they're doing is basically what they did to Dimension W and just cram a whole bunch of episodes together. If you don't like the show at all, like if you don't find any part of the show redeeming, you're probably not going to be all that into the manga.
So also, there's this son that's like, hey, check out this owl guy. He's super dangerous. And it's like, who the fuck is this?
I don't know. He just comes out of fucking nowhere.
Anyway.
Why are these guys, the owl and the rabbit, and why are they, all these people have, or rather these ghouls have, like, animal names motifs?
Well, probably because they're masks, you know. They just ended up getting called by the mask. And so it's like, hey, you're rabbit.
One more thing. What is the point of the masks? Why are they a thing?
We talked about
it,
this.
Yeah, isn't it so the good guys can't tell who they are?
But the good guys do know who they are already.
The way it made sense to me was that the doves don't know what they look like in their everyday lives. That they only recognize them by their masks. They don't know what their unmasked face looked like. Mm-hmm. So, like, Toka and all the people who work at the barista or whatever... doves could walk into that place and not know that they're ghouls because they don't recognize their face.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the Kaneki's mask is not even a full mask. You can still see, like...
Oh, it, yeah, but that's like Superman. It's like Superman, where he can put on glasses and then nobody knows that he's Superman. I think it's enough. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just enough to, like, trick him. Don't take it too literally. It's just the fact that his face is covered somewhat is enough.
All right.
I do agree that it's like, hey, look, here's Kaneki covering only part of his face. Here's, hey, look, it's definitely not the gourmet.
Yeah, the gourmet especially, like, you can totally see his face, but I guarantee you, in the lore of this world, I bet they can't recognize him.
Either that or he just doesn't give a crap either way.
Oh, yeah, he came back because he ate himself.
Yes. What the hell?
He ate himself.
That should not work.
That seems like bullshit hacks, and yet there it is.
Wait, can ghouls like regenerate themselves?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
So. Like 90%.
Okay, then this is ridiculous. Because then you could just eat your own fingers off and then they just grow back. You would never have to kill anyone.
Well, and yet...
I kind of question if that's true, so I don't know. But if so, that's real...
I think they have like a certain amount of regenerate. Like, there's probably some kind of negative bullshit involved in that, yeah. You know, or like people just don't do it because it's gross.
Well, it is gross, and it probably hurts like hell. But
I mean, their entire existence is gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Hunter, Hunter.
Yes, please.
Hunter Hunter, episode 55, Allies and Lies.
In this episode, Hisoka gets a betrayal boner.
He gets all kinds of boners.
He always has one. Constantly.
So yeah, I'll say that this arc so far has been going in a direction I didn't really expect, nor do I entirely understand. I'm not entirely sure what's about to happen next. Because I know Hunter Hunter's been said to be kind of unique amongst shonen, kind of doing out-of-box things. I still, it's hard for me to see, you know, what would or wouldn't happen, being still new for this show. So I kind of expect it to be kind of like normal, the good guys versus evil organization X type of show, where like,
Everyone pairs off.
Yeah, or like they'd swap around, or maybe some group fights, whatever. Eventually, they'd whittle down the Phantom Troop members, either kill them all or kill most of them, and maybe the last one or two reform or something of that sort. But it seems like, yeah, I don't really know where they're going with this. I'm really confused. And it seems like there's not much left arc left, given what people have been kind of saying. So I just have no idea how this is going to end. And it's all this kind of like, they're going to die or they're not going to die, or like kind of fourth dimensional chess with fortunes that have been edited and weird kind of things. And now people are either getting daggers or not getting daggers or super modes or not. I have no idea what's about to happen next, which is, I guess, kind of good in the sense
it's great. It's kind
of interesting that I just couldn't really expect what was going to happen given my familiarity with other shonen. At the same time, I'm still kind of like, I have no idea what's happening and I'm slightly lost. Well, not lost in the sense I don't understand what's happening, but just lost in the sense of like, where is it going? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is by far the strongest, I think, attribute to this show to me is that it is unconventional. And I have the whole show never been able to tell what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
So another thing that happened in this episode is Kurapika explained he explained a bit about how his chain powers work.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that one of his chains, he can do the whole like dagger in the heart Nen upgrade thing to other people.
Well, I mean, it's not a Nen upgrade thing. It's it puts a condition on them, basically saying like he can put a condition on them and it doesn't really upgrade their power. It's just like when he puts the dagger in the heart, it's like you have to do what he says or it will kill you.
Right, but I mean, basically it makes your Nen way powerful.
No. Well, like, it does it for him. Like, if you're going to make your set a condition, you have to set your own condition. He can't set one for you.
See, I think this whole thing is more complicated than it needs to be.
I think it's just sort of a misunderstanding of what that thing is. It's basically he puts it in there and puts a condition on you. It doesn't make you more powerful. It just means you got to do what he says or you get killed.
Oh, really? I thought it was supposed to make them stronger.
No. It's you do what he says or you get killed. So
what's in it for them?
They don't want to give up his secret. So they're like, put that in us so that, you know, if we get to the point where we might give up your secret, we're not going to do it because, you know, they'll be dead.
What's the secret?
How his powers work.
And they need to know that. Why?
Well, they've already been told.
So you're saying that the whole thing at the end of the last episode was so that they could get Kurapika to trust them so that he would put this thing in their heart.
Remember, because Takanoda can tell, you know.
Like, she's just got to touch you, and then she'll, you know.
Oh. So this will prevent them from lying?
This will prevent her from finding out, because they'll be dead.
They'll be dead.
Okay, or they could just say, I can't tell you, like Hisoka did.
Yeah, that's basically the lie that Hisoka is going with. He's like, oh, I've got this thing, and I can't tell you, you know, anything, because otherwise I'll die.
Okay, so they still have to make the choice not to say it. It's not like it prevents them from saying it.
Right.
Okay, but this gives them a truthful way of saying, I cannot tell you.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense then.
Yeah.
So they're not going to teach Gon and Killua this technique to power up like he had?
Well, I mean, the technique is basically you put a limitation on how you use your power.
Right. That's what I thought they were going to do.
Yeah, no, they're not going to go around and do that because, you know, it takes more than like 30 seconds. Like, they don't even have a special ability yet to put a limitation on.
Okay.
So
I'm glad we talked about that because that confused me then.
Yeah.
So you're saying Kurapika is putting the daggers or seems to be about to put daggers in his friends so that they won't have to tell what's her name again?
Takanoda.
Okay, this seems a little weird and I guess not clear, but I guess if that's what's happening, I guess that makes more sense, I guess.
Also, Hisoka's really... So, like, his whole thing is like, haha, I betrayed you, but I was really forced to. Just kidding. I just betrayed you because it gives me a boner.
Like, he's still got, like, 4 different boners from, like, 7 different things this episode.
It wasn't just to give him pleasure. It was because he is trying to manipulate them into not leaving.
Right.
And I think the reason is because then he knows that he will be able to fight Krolo.
Yeah, he wants to fight Krolo. He doesn't care how he gets to do it. He just wants to make sure that fight gets set up.
Right.
But it is cool that, you know, like, Krolo, like, figures it all out, and he's like, wow, he's amazing. Too bad he's wrong.
Well, I mean, he has no idea about Texture Surprise.
Really? I would have thought he'd know.
Like, none of them know about Texture Surprise.
Well, like, that's Hisoka's trump card. Like, that's the one he doesn't tell anybody about.
Gotcha. I think it's weird, too, that the glasses girl knows that she's going to die, and this is, like, doesn't appear to care.
Well, I mean, if you know in advance, you can do something to stop it.
Oh, that's right. They did say that you can change the future, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Because, I mean, in the auction, a bunch of the guys had things saying, you know, if you go down a set of stairs and try and come back up, you will die. So they're like, nah, I ain't going down no stairs. And they walked away.
Gotcha. I guess I missed that.
So you want to talk about Lupin the Third? I almost said fourth.
Lupin the Third, the fourth. Fourth series. Yes.
Yeah.
Lupin the Third, Part 4, Number 1, The Wedding of Lupin the Third. Oh man, that's a lot of numbers. Jesus Christ.
It's a lot of Lupins.
So you can instantly tell that this series is just going to be really episodic. Like, introduce heist. Heist. They kind of maybe don't get away with it, but they don't get captured anyway.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, introduce heist, they do the heist, Fujiko betrays them, other things happen, they run away from Pops.
I'm perfectly fine with that.
I love how they just introduce, how they just invite Pops to the wedding just to fuck with him.
Yeah, this is great. Of course, everyone I think here has heard of Lupin or maybe seen Lupin in the past. I had never actually seen it myself, but I've always knew it was, you know, really revered. And I love it. This is great. It's so fun and lighthearted and just energizing. You know, it's just like, man, if you go back and read the thread during that episode, just everybody was just like, this is awesome.
Yeah. It's just a lot of fun.
There's no real pretentiousness to it. It's straightforward. I mean, there is an overarching narrative that shows up later in the series. But overall, I would say it's, again, more straightforward. It doesn't try to confuse you with dialogue that's kind of potentially obscure or obtuse. I think just pretty straightforward, you know, adult cast, adult characters. And not in the, you know, adult as in like rated M kind of way, but just like normal people in a fantasy kind of setting way. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, I mean, if Lupin had his way, it would be very adult in the adult sense of the word. It's just, you know, he doesn't get his way.
The show's tone, it really rides the line between being kind of sophisticated and fun for adults, but then it has kind of like a kind of cartoony nature to it as well that's kind of lighthearted and fun. And, oh, man, it's so good.
Oh, yes. I will note that apparently Series 2 with the red shirt Lupin is on Hulu, so you can go and catch that. And there's like 70-something episodes of that, which is basically them running around acting silly.
Lupin the Third. They run around and act silly.
And betray each other.
Well, it's really easy to see how these characters are so... they have such longevity and stuff because they are really, you know, they have like an iconic character type to each one of them and they play off each other really well. And just even just in the short amount that we saw in this one episode, it's easy to tell their characteristics, their, you know, how they, all their mannerisms and everything. They just wear it on their sleeve. I want to talk for a moment too briefly about just, I think it takes a lot of talent to mimic this classic animation style.
Oh, it looks good.
Not only does it look really good, but like I was really paying close attention to it, and I don't know how they do it. They make it look like this was animated in the 80s. And every character design and every, like when you see a character turn his face to the left, or just the you know, the number of character frames they have. There's only one shot in the whole episode that you can tell looks modern. There's like a CG shot of them jumping onto a roof. And then that kind of sticks out because you can, you know, they wouldn't have had CG back then. But like everything else, other than the fact that it's in HD, it looks like it was animated in the 80s in like this style. And they managed to pull it off perfectly, that it just looks exactly right. And I just, that's got to be really tricky because they must have had to really study how to make the characters look that way.
Right. And it's not only they look that way, but it looks a lot cleaner than it would have coming out of the 80s too.
Yeah, a bit. But it also has some roughness to it.
Yeah.
And I think it has like the thickness of the lines and some of the motion blur effects they use. I mean, it's just exactly like what it would have looked like back then.
I don't remember where this is or where I found it, but I do know there were at least one or more articles, and I think also video, going to the animation process they were doing to create the series. Like there was like it was kind of a big deal when it was being made, you know, it was the return of Lupin, a new Lupin series. There's a good number of hype around it, but they had gone to a fair number of detail. I don't know if this was posted on like an anime news network or on one of those like Sakuga sites or, you know, somewhere in Japan. Like that. But they did like a whole article and kind of, I think, a video too about the process they were using in terms of making this anime. So basically everything you've pointed out is absolutely correct. They were paying a lot of attention, making a lot of effort to make it, make it show this way, give it its exact look. And they had gone into detail about it somewhere online. But unfortunately, I don't have the source on me. But maybe someone can find it later. But yeah, they put a lot of sweat and heart into this, and it shows.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad to hear that because it was super apparent to me as someone who really likes to look at how animation looks. I mean, some people, like, they can watch an anime or they can watch a cartoon series, and to them, it always looks the same. But then I'll watch that series, and I can sort of pick out, like, oh, no, this was animated differently than the other episode. Like, I can see the differences. And for this, it's like I can look at this and go, man, they are trying so hard to make this look exactly like the stuff from the 80s. It's so apparent to me that, like, I think it would have been so much easier for them to just draw these characters or animate them in a more modern style and it would look different. Yeah. But this looks just like it, and it's so cool because of that.
It really does. Like, if you go back and sort of watch the second series of Lupin the Third, like, the main difference tends to be, you know, well, not only the number of episodes, but simply that Lupin has a red coat in that instead of a blue one here.
The only other thing I'll mention too is that I know that Rebecca is a new character in this show. I think she's great. Like, I am automatically, I hope she comes back because I think she's fun.
She's
really
not every
cool.
episode, but she shows up from time to time.
Great.
That's good because she's fun. I like her.
She is the right person to be wed to Lupin, it feels like.
Yeah, it does feel like that. Like, sort of like he accidentally found the right person for him, only, you know.
Yeah, just someone just as sneaky and such a double-crossing, but also suave. And yeah,
and yet he's still never going to get any.
Probably not, no.
So you want to talk about Naruto?
If we have to.
Naruto Shippuden, episode 162, Pain to the World. Pain, 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 pain. I think this guy might have an obsession with pain.
Have you guys seen Teen Titan Go, any of you guys?
Yeah.
You know the pain bot in that show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do know that, yeah.
Yeah, that mental image just flashed my mind along with that pain, pain, all I know is pain. It just flashed my mind right now, so. Continue on.
We were talking about in the thread that, like, or at least I think it was in the thread, or maybe it was in the last week's episode. I can't remember. Pain is not an interesting villain. He is just your generic megalomaniac.
The dialogue sucks.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, if he had that Frieza style dialogue, it's like really fun. Like, you know, like if he was Space Napoleon or something, that'd be something. You know, it'd be interesting at least.
The only interesting thing about Pain is his techniques and, like, I guess the fact that you're supposed to be impressed by how powerful he is. And he is indeed powerful.
Yeah,
but
like
as far as the character is concerned, he's like the most monotone, boring. He's just such a tropey villain.
He's dull. He's not doing anything interesting with it. He's just, you know, the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know,
I have a real particular problem with villains who, like, you know, consider themselves gods. Like, I am a god and you are all ants compared to me. And this is exactly that.
Well, I mean, you can have fun with that, you know, but I mean, you got to be willing to, like, chew on the scenery or whatever, you know. And Pain is just sort of, he's dull. He's not going into, like, megalomaniac speeches about how much better than you.
Well,
better than
everyone
he is.
He does go into speeches, but he's...
I know,
like,
they're boring.
They're like, this is like, this village doesn't know what pain is. I will show them what pain is. It's like, shut up.
Yeah, it's like they're very dull speeches. He's not like Ninja Hitler or Ninja Napoleon or something where it'd be like, oh yes, he's interesting because, you know, he's complete wackadoo crazy.
So he does an attack called Almighty Push.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess put a giant crater in the middle of the Leaf Village.
I'll take the Hidden Leaf Village and push it over here. I messed it up. I was supposed to do Patrick. Why don't we take the Hidden Leaf Village and push it somewhere else?
And it's
like
not
all
there
over
anymore.
The place.
Yeah, he basically nuked them.
And then Naruto and his frog buddies show up at the end in this very kind of, I have to admit, hype moment at the very end of the episode where he's standing there and he's got the frog eyes and he's got all his frog posse with him. And it looks like it's pretty cool, but all I could think was like, hey, you know, if he'd just shown up like 10 minutes earlier, there wouldn't be a giant crater in the middle of the fucking city right now.
But
make the comeback worth it. Due to cultural osmosis, I kind of knew that at some point Naruto would go train at the Mountain of Frog People, get sage mode, come back and fight Pain. What I didn't realize until I actually just saw this arc right now is that the time he spends training is what, a day? 2 days? How much time does he actually train for?
I think a couple. I think it's like a week or two, technically.
The thing is that I don't think his training and the events in the Leaf Village are actually simultaneous.
Yeah.
They're not doing a very good job portraying time then, or passage of time.
No, because like he goes through like two or three different nights of his training.
It's still really, really short training to gain a whole new super mode to fight the most powerful ninja they've fought so far in the entire story.
Yeah, well, you know.
He's Naruto. So I guess that's how it happens.
Yeah, I like how he basically showed up on a frog, riding a frog, riding another frog with his three frog buddies.
I'm glad you like that. I'm frogged out, man.
I'm just like, all these frogs just showed up and like, what, two of them are going to do anything? Like the three big dudes, I'm like, yeah, those guys are here to throw down. But that medium-sized dude, I'm like, nah, he's just going to bolt the second it gets dangerous. What's he doing here?
But do you know what the hypest moment in the whole episode was? When Akamaru pissed on some guy.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
You peed on a guy. I gotta feel bad for that guy. He got peed on, man. That's some R. Kelly shit.
I did like a double take. I'm like, wait, did that just happen?
I mean, dogs, man. I wish we got more of Kiba's mom, though. She's pretty cool.
Yeah, she does seem pretty cool.
So yeah, let's send that on. His mom's pretty cool.
Okay.
So, also Ghost in the Shell was here.
It was.
It was Ghost in the Shell. Kind of timely Russian topics, though.
I mean, I think it was technically supposed to be a North Korea XP, which, also timely.
Well, you know, everyone's like, hey, there's crime going from this other country. And the Prime Minister's like, nope!
No crime.
Definitely none that I'm involved in.
I thought it was an okay episode. I always like a good Aramaki double swerve, though. He's a master at that.
Like, you never know which way he's coming at you.
He's always got a plan to do in the bad guy without them knowing.
Yeah, like, even if he's not supposed to be touching the bad guy, you know he's going to take him down.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just kind of surprised he doesn't rule the world or the country at this point.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Which I believe might actually have been the ending plot of season two. Like, Aramaki decides to run the country.
They'd be better off. I mean, let's be real.
Some of his episodes have been kind of my favorite that we've been watching recently. Because he's just like, again, you wouldn't think the guy who sits behind the desk and just tells people what to do would be a cool character. But man, the guy's got... He's well written.
Yeah. Guy called William Knight. Apparently he's old. Damn, he's old. How is he still alive? He was born in 1933.
Guy's a worker.
His voice actor for Aramaki?
Yeah.
I mean, Alan Young was voicing Scrooge till what, he was like late 80s or something?
Yeah, and I mean, the entire cast of Lupin the Third is pretty up there too.
Well, I think Lupin's VA is in the 60s, right, or something like that?
Yeah, 60s or 70s or something. But this guy's like 90 at this point. I think he's, you know, retired.
Anything else?
I haven't got anything else.
I've got nothing. That'll be all for episode 61 of the Tsunami Gaff Podcast. Thank you, C. Kohler.
No problem.
Thank you, B-Dubs.
Okay.
Thank you, Crocodile.
It was a pleasure. Have a good night.
You too. We'll see you next week for episode 62. Good night. Later.